Education Matters is co-hosted by Gwida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW-Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, vice president for community and government relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Education Matters. I'm Bob Haggerty. Today's guest, a coach, a teacher. He's been all over. And I should tell you, born and raised here in Kenosha, Wisconsin, before he went out east and then came back. Coach Troy Bow. And if you remember, his dad, also a coach, Robert Bow. And he was my coach back in at Lincoln days, going all the way back into the late 70s and early 80s. Coach Bow, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
As always. And one of the things I always love is that you never mind speaking your mind. And I really appreciate that. We'll try not to get you in trouble. And if we do, I owe your wife a drink. So.
Well, I think as I've become older, I've gotten a little bit better at what to say and what not to say,
there
hopefully.
You bet. So, and we've been talking a little bit about that this afternoon, and I don't know if you're aware, but during the period that we've been on air this year for doing football, we've had a number of individuals come and talk about their displeasure, talk about how sports in general need to be removed from extracurricular activities, that the money can be used and that it can be used better elsewhere. And I should tell everybody, Coach Bow is just not a coach. He coaches now out in Paddock Lake at West Osha. He was the head coach at Kenosha Bradford, but he is also in education teacher. He teaches special ed, and he also co-teaches math. So, you know, he does algebra this semester?
Yes, Algebra 1 and Algebra 2.
So, I mean, he a math guy, in my mind, has a pretty good idea about this. And I did some research, and I want some of your thoughts about this. This is from SutterHealth.org. Playing sports helps you stay in shape. It teaches you how to organize your time. It boosts your friendships. And it builds relationships with your peers and adults. Start you off right there.
Absolutely. I think it gives a lot of kids a reason to come to school. I can't tell you in 27 years of education the number of student athletes that I think without sports would not have made it through high school, you know, and I've dealt with, you know, hundreds personally.
We played sports when we were in school. I did golf with Coach Fenema. You played with Coach Davies. Davies. And I have the pleasure of knowing Coach Davies and Coach Fenema as well. They didn't teach you just about the sport. They taught you how to be a man.
Correct. I think that's what sports does. You know, I wrestled and played football growing up, and I think, you know, for me, there was nothing, you know, in wrestling, there's nowhere to hide. You're out there on the mat with another person, and it's you against them, and, you know, may the best person win. And you grow up in a hurry. You know, you didn't get to come off the mat and say, oh, that was so-and-so's fault, or that was the ref's fault. It was you or them. So you grow up in a hurry that way. You know, in football, too, and coaches teach life lessons. And you know, and I'm not so sure that, you know, sports didn't save you and I, Bob. You know,
right.
We were going to be fine anyway. We had good parents, and our parents were educated, and my parents were educators, and I was going to go to college either way.
I didn't have a choice in the matter.
Right. Yeah. Nor did I. Well, I think I probably did, but, you know, it was just kind of a foregone conclusion that you were going to college. I think who we're saving are the fringe kids, the kids that don't have those benefits like we had growing up of, you know, somebody helping us with our homework, or kids that are going home to parents or parent that is working second shift and getting their own meals and stuff like that. So that coach, whether that be male or female coach, becomes a second parent. And in a lot of cases, primary parent, because they're the ones taking the most interest in that student. And that, you know, to me, it's a no-brainer. And you gave some research, and I know there's all kinds of research out there as far as percentage of athletes that go to college versus percentage of students in the school who aren't athletes.
Well, I'll stop you because you're right. If you go to www.atyourrisk.org, they say that physically active children, meaning they played a sport in high school, are 15% more likely to attend college.
Absolutely. And, you know, and not necessarily that attending college is our goal, because there's plenty of great trades out there and great things that kids can do. But even getting through high school, the number of kids I've had that finished high school because of the sport.
Well, and I'm going to go back to the same. Participating in team sports result in a higher GPA for both high school boys and girls athletics. For me, and when I call a game, one of my first things I want to know is anybody academically not eligible? There are minimum, how do I put it?
Standards.
Standards, yeah. Yes. And good coaches out there really push to stay above that minimum, so you're not worrying about that player being academically not eligible.
Absolutely. And you don't want to lose any of your kids to academic standards. And they vary by school district, but they're all fairly stringent. I believe KUSD may have a 2.0. I think when we were in school in KUSD, it was 2.0.
Right.
You know, now at West Osha Central, we have a 2F policy. Anytime you have 2Fs, then you're not eligible actually the next week. So it might be just one grade in the grade book that's giving you that F, but if you have more than one, then you're not eligible to play unless you get that fixed.
Which, again, and I love when I was talking about athletics, you pointed out that it's a student athlete. So the student comes first, which gives that opportunity and really shows where the priority comes in.
Absolutely. I don't think it's just athletics. It's all fine arts and everything else. We have, you know, hundreds and thousands of students in the county involved in band and choir and drama, and all of those things keep kids involved in the school. It's amazing when you walk around a high school after the last bell rings and how many kids are still there. You know, how many kids are still in that building from 3 to 6. Being involved. They're not out on the streets. They're not causing problems in the community. They're involved at the school.
Right.
And that, to me, creates better citizens. You know, we don't have kids getting in trouble that are involved in athletics and fine arts or anything else. They're involved with adults at the school and doing things the right way and learning from those people, too.
Positive involvement. And the coaches become these surrogate parents. I talk about, you know, I mentioned Coach Fenema. In college, I played tennis. And again, Henry Thurman, who also coached at Kenosha Tremper a while ago for tennis. I mean, these people were mentors and still have been mentors to me while growing up. And Coach Davies, of course. You don't get many people that are as important in many lives as a Coach Davies.
Oh, absolutely. You know, anytime you stay anywhere that long and coach that volume of kids, you make an impact.
And you have the success with back-to-back state championships. I believe, and you can tell me if, because you've experienced success, I think success breeds success. If you know how to win, it's much easier to win again and again and again.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things I say all the time is, if you've never won, how do you know how to? If you're fortunate enough to have gone through winning programs, and I was fortunate, you know, here to be with Coach Davies. In my coaching career, I coached in two state championship games in South Carolina, unfortunately lost them both. But really successful coaches, head coaches that I learned from. I was a head coach in wrestling and had six or seven state champs in South Carolina. So I think winning absolutely breeds success. I think we're seeing kind of that renaissance at West Osha Central now, as far as our kids learned how to win. Last year, the foundation has been laid, so that's kind of the expectation throughout the program. And Coach Davies obviously had that at Tremper, where the expectation is laid. And I think if you look at the team that's ranked number one right now, Muskego High School in football, it took them a while. It took Coach Krause a while to be successful, but then they won back-to-back state titles. And now, even though their talent level might be a little less than it was 5 years ago, they're still winning because the kids expect to win every time they go out there.
Right. Yeah, I believe this goes all the way even to the pro level. You have teams that just, they get to a point and everybody goes, oh, then they fall apart. It's because they don't know how to go past that point and they don't know how to win. And I go and I do a lot of public speaking and I talk about the ability to go past that in everyday life as well. And a lot of that for me came from starting in high school and either debate or being involved in sports.
I think sports, you know, and let's face it, in life and in what we do, there's going to be, unfortunately, winners and I wouldn't want to say losers, but there's people who are more successful in their jobs than others in every walk of life. And I think sports lays a great foundation from that because you're, you know, you learn how to win. I think it's important to learn how to lose, too.
Yes, I agree.
It's important to learn how to lose and handle yourself with grace. And all of us struggle through that many times.
See, but there I disagree with you. I think kids today have gotten – I have a problem when I lose, okay? I make sure that I'm respectful. I make sure that I congratulate, but I don't like to lose. It bothers me to lose. And I think that there is a group out there that it doesn't bother them to lose. And there's a point in which that you either give up or you reach down to find something that you never knew you had to continue. You may still lose, but you've left everything out there, and there is nothing left. And I question whether this is happening all the time.
I don't think it happens all the time with our kids nowadays, you know, and I go back to like when we were kids and we always like to think that everybody tried hard and everybody hated to lose. And the reality, I think, is we all grew up with kids who were okay losing, you know. And I think we have this perception of, oh, we've become softer. And I'm not sure that's true because I think our parents would have said the same thing of us. I think, you know, the greatest generation, that World War II generation would have said, you guys are soft.
Well, and I happen to agree. Compared to the greatest generation, we probably were soft.
Right. And I think each generation probably as we age thinks, oh, these kids are soft. We have a lot of kids that are winners and compete hard and aren't going to quit ever. Do we have plenty of kids who are, like you said, okay losing? Probably, you know, probably. And I think, you know, you and I, the only way we get to compete anymore is golf or pickleball.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Something like that.
I'll go along with that.
Right. And yeah, that still bothers me. I don't like to lose that either.
Right.
You know, but, you know, I think golf, you kind of reserve yourself to the fact, well, maybe that person was better than me or they were today. And it's not it's not as physically demanding. It's a skill thing.
Right.
Whereas pickleball, to me, and my wife will chuckle, but I get more upset losing at pickleball because it's more of a physical thing. and you and I, and I try to preach to our kids, school. How does this all relate to school? Well, you're competing mentally.
Right.
You know, the first thing you do with an assignment, an assessment, is you put your name at the top. And then everything that comes after that tells me about you. I don't care what subject it is. I don't care what test it is, what quiz it is. The first thing you do is you put your name at the top. And then from there on, to me, you're competing. You know, it might be just with yourself. Do I know this better than I knew it last week?
And that's okay.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it might be, as we know, when we get to college, I'm competing with everybody else in this room.
Right.
And that's awesome. That was awesome to me. I learned right. that from sports that, hey, I want to be the curve wrecker.
Right.
And I try to tell our kids all the time is, man, everything that comes on that page that you write down, or nowadays a lot of times that computer screen that you type down, that's you. Right. You're telling that teacher how much you care about them and that class, and how much pride do you have in yourself.
Mediocrity. My wife is a nurse, and she taught for 6 years. And one of the things that was very difficult for her is that she said, I don't want a mediocre nurse. Do you want a mediocre nurse? And I'm like, no, I wouldn't want a mediocre nurse. I wouldn't want a mediocre doctor. But looking back, I don't want a mediocre policeman. I don't want a mediocre fireman. I don't want a mediocre teacher because, my goodness, they're teaching the next generation. I don't want a mediocre server because is my food going to be cold or am I going to get the right food? So really living up to your best ability is something that I feel is so very important. And there are some teachers out there that really instill that in their students.
For sure. You know, and I think live up to your potential, whatever that potential might be, live up to your potential. And there's a lot of great teachers all over the world,
right,
and that impact a lot of lives. You know, and we always have this debate of, you know, whether athletics and extracurriculars are important, and teachers impact lives, coaches impact lives, band directors impact lives. And the big thing for me is, you know, and there's plenty of teachers out there who impact a lot of lives. I know personally for me over 27 years, I've impacted way more on the coaching end than I have on the teaching end. And you know, and I don't think that's because I'm a bad teacher. I think that's because I spend way more time with the student athletes that I coach than the students that I teach. The students I teach, I see 50 minutes a day. The athletes I coach, when we, you know, during wrestling, it was, you know, 2 to 2.5 hours a day, and then 12 hours on a Saturday.
Right.
Long bus rides, everything else. Those are the kids that, and I explain it to people this way, is when I see former students, I get a fist bump, I get a handshake. When I see former wrestlers and football players, I get a hug. That's the difference.
So let's talk football. Yeah, everybody said, well, you're getting the coach in. Are you talking football? I said, how can't we talk football? Tell me about West Osha.
Like I mentioned earlier, I think we're in a little bit of a renaissance. You know, Coach Franz, our head coach, has done a great job of building a culture there, of winning. You know, the addition of the youth program out there, I think it's...
So why don't you touch, because not everybody's going to understand what a quote-unquote youth program is.
So the Nightingales are the kind of patriarch family of the... youth program at West Osha Central, and what they started, and I believe it was 5 or so years ago, they have what they call the Junior Falcons, and they play the Junior Panthers, who might be from Wilmot, and Waterford has a junior program, and they play the Muskegos and the Franklins and everybody else, but it starts at the third grade level, and they're Junior Falcons, and they have
so it's a travel league.
It's a travel league in southeastern Wisconsin, and they may even play, I think as they get older, they play some, maybe some northern Illinois teams. But I think our Falcon I don't know a lot about who they play,
right.
but I think they do play mostly Southeastern Wisconsin teams, so kids that they're going to play when they're older. And it's third through eighth grade with teams at each and every grade level. So there's a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade team. And in some cases, when the numbers are there, multiple teams at each grade level. It is, you know, we are starting to reap the rewards of that at the high school level now. Kids who started as young kids playing together are now seniors.
Sure,
at West Ocean.
They have the relationship. They know what the other person's going to do before they do it.
Right.
How they run a route, where the ball is going to be thrown, how somebody's going to block.
Well, and I think the benefit, too, is that they, our youth program, will use at least our high school terminology.
Okay,
they
that,
might not.
That was a question that I was going to have, because in Kenosha, the city of Kenosha, one of the things that I have heard others talk about is that the middle school, at the middle school level, they may not use the same system as what the high schools are going to. So instead of coming in and knowing day one what the system is, they may have to learn it. That may not be the case as we go and they go from that eighth to ninth grade out in Paddock Lake.
It's completely different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our kids come in ninth grade and at least know the terminology. They might not, you know, they're not going to put in all the coverages we play on defense. They're not going to put in all the stunts. They're not going to do everything we do on offense, but at least the base stuff is the same. You know, and I said I wasn't going to get in trouble, but in Kenosha, that's not the case. And it's not because coaches don't try hard, and it's not because coaches don't put a lot of time in. And because, you know, I never want to bash any coach that's going to give up their time to help kids. But the middle school product in Kenosha is not helping the three public high schools in Kenosha one bit. In fact, I would argue that it probably hurts. When I was at Bradford, we tried to get that changed. We have the Ramblers in town. I forget the gentleman's name that runs the Ramblers, but he actually came to Coach Hoffman at ITA and myself and said, hey, I want to turn this over to you guys. I want to make this the Junior Red Devils, the Junior Hawks, and the Junior Trojans, and you guys take it over. And so we went to Brian Mogensen, who's the KUSD athletic director, and we proposed that to him. And he said that's not something that the district would be interested in doing as far as getting rid of middle school football and doing something like that. And it's no coincidence that since KUSD's added a third high school, none of them have won.
Well, you're diluting the talent by a third at that point, right? I mean,
it is, but it's not the point that it's not talented. You know, I mean, ITA is it not the largest school in the state? If not the largest, it's in the top four.
Right.
So there's plenty of talent. There's plenty of kids and there's plenty of talent. It's, you know, coaches at the high school level in Kenosha are stuck, like you said, in ninth grade. Here's what we do. And here's how we do it. And here's what it's called. Can you be successful? Sure. Would it make it more successful? And, you know, and I go back to this, Bob, is our kids out at West Ocean grow up, come to the games, and you know what little kids do at games. They find a different field and they play football.
Absolutely.
But they all dream about
playing there,
being Falcons,
being Friday night under the lights.
Nobody, you know, a kid who goes to, let's say, I don't even know the elementary schools that would be in the Bradford attendance zone, but a kid who goes to that school and then goes to Bullen doesn't grow up dreaming about being a Red Devil.
Right.
You know, they kind of do their own thing. They don't have that allegiance. But if we could ever change that in Kenosha, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take changing that youth system to Junior Red Devils, Junior Hawks, and Junior Trojans, to those kids growing up thinking, I can't wait to play at Anderson Field, which isn't even Anderson Field anymore, but I can't wait to play there for Tremper. You know, I grew up dreaming about that. I can't wait to do that. And I don't think we have that in the city. And unfortunately, you know, we tried, you know, I mean, we tried 3-4 years ago to get that changed, and it was pretty well shot down.
So, what makes this team's undefeated, by the way, right?
We lost once.
The one, but not in conference.
In conference, yeah.
Right. Tell me about this team. Tell me. And, oh, before I have you do that, I want you to rattle off one of the plays, the code. I mean, nobody's going to know what it means, and that's fine. But people look and what bothers me is, well, they're just football players, right? You can't be bright and be a football player. This, even at the high school level, you were talking about the language and the terminology. This is something that is incredibly complex. I mean, you may say 6 words that has that have 11 guys going in different directions.
Yeah, I think our offense is a little more wordy than our defense, and I'm our defensive coordinator, so I can tell you that in this offseason we did try to pare that down a little bit.
Okay.
But, you know, a typical call, something we might call tomorrow night, would be over, stab, black.
And that's going to tell all 11 where they're going.
Correct. And base, and they'll know, based on our practices all week, based on Union Grove's formation, if they need to check out of that call and what call they're going to need to check into. So if we get a certain formation tomorrow night and we made that previous call, they might check to over, slant, wood, Buffalo.
And that is a linebacker that's going to make that call?
Yeah, our two linebackers
normally
will make most of that call.
And the
last word in our terminology is always our coverage. So one of our safeties will check that too.
Okay. So they're reading the offense just the way you see on TV, or if you watch the Facebook, I'll talk about the audible that's being called at the line of scrimmage by the quarterback. The defense is going to audible the offense in basically the same way. It becomes a chess match at that point.
Correct. And, you know, for me as a defensive coordinator, I enjoy calling defense against teams that don't huddle because then I get to see their formation. I shouldn't say a struggle, but it's a little more difficult when you're playing somebody like we play this week, Union Grove, who gets in a huddle. And they get in a huddle and then they come out in their formation. So then the kids have to have more built-in checks because you can't change it. I'll make a call, and then when they come out in a different formation that call doesn't suit, we've got to teach our kids during the week, okay, we want to get out of this and into this. Whereas if somebody is in a no huddle and not going super fast, you get to see their formation.
So I will tell you something that I brought up. It's been about 5 years that I've talked about, and I don't know what other schools in other cities, and I don't even know if this is possible, but I always said that there should be one, for the city of Kenosha, there should be one varsity team. That they pull from all three, those create the varsity, and then they come from JV from each of the schools. So Kenosha High School at that point. And then they pull from each JV team. And I don't even know if that's legal WIAA stuff, but it's always been fascinating to me because we've had really exceptional athletes. And I don't know whether today's exceptional athletes are having that opportunity to be able to be as good as what they could be.
Well, I think if we had that team in Kenosha, they would be state champs every year. There's enough talent in the three schools that if it was one varsity team for
right.
the city, they would be state champs every year. It's not legal with the
okay.
WIAA. They can't
I didn't
do
know
it.
If they ever...
And I think one thing missing there is one of the neat things about high school is Friday night. and Friday Night Lights.
Right.
And that allegiance and loyalty and the camaraderie with your friends that you grew up with in the school atmosphere. You know, we've got a great atmosphere at West Osha Central. Our pep band plays. The student section's usually very crowded. We've got a lot of community support, and that's neat. And you know, to me, the problem with, well, if we didn't have that school allegiance, would they have that backing? Who would be there? Just, you know, just their parents? Who would come see them? And I think the community might back it, but then where do the students decide to go, you know, that want to watch the game? So I think it's neat that we have high school sports and allegiance to your high school. And, you know, I think you can get close in Kenosha. I think you can get there. You know, the COVID year at Bradford, which was my last year at Bradford, we were 4-1. We lost that first COVID game to Franklin, 24-21. We were beating them 21-10 in the second half.
Yeah.
That same Franklin team were state champs the next year.
Right.
And we had a bunch of people coming back the following year. So I think you can get close. You know, I think with, I'm not sure you can win it all, but I know you can win playoff games in Kenosha for sure.
Let's talk about how hard was it when you left Bradford to make the decision to go elsewhere? And because I want the feeling when coaches change, and I have to believe that this happens at every level. How tough is it to see those former students, or now those students have all graduated for you?
Correct.
But part of you is still a Trojan because you played for them.
Absolutely.
And part of you has to have feelings for for the Bradford Red Devils, because I know how committed you were to that school.
Yeah, I can't say that all those feelings towards Bradford are positive, but
sure.
The kids, they absolutely are.
Right.
You know, I had a great experience with the student athletes at Bradford, and really, quite frankly, all the kids in the school and staff. You know, the issue I had in KUSD was really administration. And that's a long story that we don't need to talk about.
No.
But yeah, it's interesting when you see those kids. You know, I see a few of them at KCC over the summer that I coached, which is great. It's great to see former players. It's always hard to leave. But, you know, one of the things my dad taught me is there's always going to be more kids to coach. There's always going to be that next group. So you can't just hang on and keep hanging on and keep hanging on because, oh, I just want to see this group graduate, or I just want to see this group graduate, because there's always going to be this group. You know, and my dad had to go through that at St. Joe's, where they had all kinds of wrestling success, and eventually he actually walked away to come coach us at Tremper in wrestling, and first at McKinley and then at Tremper. So he walked away to do that. For me, you know, in the kind of it's I've done it quite a bit now. You know, I did it 3 times in Greenville when I lived in South Carolina. So and actually there I was actually coaching against some of the teams. I'm very glad that I didn't coach against Bradford the last 3 years and have to coach against those kids, because that's the part that makes it a lot harder is after the game, when you're walking across the field and you're hugging all these kids, and you know, hopefully you're on the winning side, but
that's what you're there to do.
Hate to see them go through losses like that, you know. And but kids you get close to, and you know, you build lifelong relationships. Is, you know, before when we were talking about the impact of coaches and things like that, is you build lifelong relationships. And fortunately now with social media, whether that be Twitter, Facebook, and of course the kids are on Instagram and Snapchat and all that
and
stuff.
And what's going to happen tomorrow? I mean,
there'll
be another one of the social media things
tomorrow. Right. But I'm, you know, kids that when I first started coaching in the late 90s, early 2000s in Key West, Florida, kids that were on my first wrestling team, I'm still in contact with all the time. That's what's neat about it, is it doesn't matter if, you know, I was at Bradford 3 years and left. Those kids I'm going to have contact with, you know, hopefully, in an impact on the rest of their life.
Right.
You know, I was looking at Whitewater's Two Deep last week when they went on the road. They post their Two Deep, and the Crump brothers, who played for me at Bradford,
right,
are now on the Two Deep at Whitewater and on the travel squad. So I didn't realize they were. So I grabbed my phone. Of course, those kids, I have those kids' numbers in my phone, and I sent them a quick text the night before the game. Hey, keep it up. Great job, guys. Have fun, you know. And so I think those are the type of, you know, that's more important than the name on the building. You know, I don't care if it's Bradford, Tremper, West Osha Central. It doesn't matter. It's the kids, you know, and the name of the kids that you coached. And those kids are – it doesn't matter where.
Right.
It matters that you built that relationship.
Is it hard to go from the head coach to a coordinator?
It's been fantastic. honestly, Bob, I talk about this a lot because I get that question a lot. And actually last weekend I was talking to my uncle who lives out in Oregon, and he said, so do you like it better or is it hard? It's a two-way street. One, as the defensive coordinator, all I have to do is coach, and I get to coach all the time. I coach our defensive backs in practice. I get to call our plays on Friday night. We come up with our game plans on the weekends. You get to coach football. As the head coach, you get to coach football, but man, you got to do a lot of other things.
Right.
I mean, I would say, you know, now I am 100% football coach, and you know, Coach Franz is maybe if he's lucky, a 50% football coach and a 50% administrator. And, you know, he's got to run all the grade reports and he's got to answer all the emails and he's got to answer all the complaints from parents or administration. He's got to get the email from the teacher that says so-and-so was screwing around in class, you know, and he's got to bring up that punishment. And I've really had a great time just kind of ribbing him a little bit and saying, I'm glad that's not me anymore. Have fun doing that. Or, you know, not that it's a burden, but we have a youth program out there. I think they meet monthly. He's got to go to those meetings.
Okay.
And the defensive coordinator doesn't have to go.
Right.
So it's in that way, it's fantastic. The way that it, you know, maybe isn't great is you're not always going to agree with everything the head coach does. What was nice about being the head coach was, yeah, you could solicit everybody's opinion, but ultimately you were going to do it how you wanted to do it. Now we don't always do it how I want to do it.
Sure.
But that, you know, that's kind of the rub there is, yeah, that's okay, but I also don't have to go to the youth meeting, and I don't have to answer any emails, and I don't have to do any of that.
Sure, goods and bads of everything.
So there's sometimes you got to kind of swallow your pride a little bit and say, okay, we'll do it that way. That's okay.
We've got to talk about, and I am in no way over, by the way, again, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. I think this is going to be a good game. A lot of people have said it's one of these statistical things. If we look at the statistics, West Osha should dominate, and they may. But I think that it's a very good game. I think that there's good athletes coming from the Grove, and I don't want to overlook them. But I'm going out a couple of weeks, and I've got to ask you about Lake Geneva. We did Lake Geneva last week, and I don't see teams, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night, because I don't get to see teams as good as what I saw in Lake Geneva last week.
Yeah, they're great. You know, first of all, as the defensive coordinator, I kind of have made it a point my whole career to focus on the week at hand. You know, so I'm focused on Union Grove. I only watch Union Grove. After Union Grove, we finish Waterford, Elkhorn,
right,
Badger,
right,
which are, you know, the three top teams in our conference besides us right now. So Waterford, new coach, Coach Schiffman, who's a former college guy. They look really good on film because I do see them when I was watching Union Grove. They played last week. So I've seen some Waterford. they're solid. They're good. They will give us all we can handle. Elkhorn's had a great year so far.
And they're always a good – that's always a rivalry game.
Right. And then, of course, Badger that you asked about, who thumped us last year, and even though we had a great year, the quarterback's back.
Right.
Yeah, I know they lost a lot on defense.
I'm trying to remember O'Grady, the sophomore – with a 63-yard run last week. The week before, he had a punt return. He's 6'4" as a sophomore and has sprinter speed at that type of height. How do you mentally prepare? I know you guys are always physically prepared. I know you well enough. But how do you get in their head to mentally prepare for a game of what could be that magnitude?
I think, defensively, Badger would pose a lot of problems because they run a lot of triple option and midline and stuff like that. So for us, it's really assignment football that week. It's focused on what your job is and not go outside of what your job is. And our kids, I think are pretty level-headed as far as our leaders are players. Our leaders are good players, and they're focused kids, and they're we've got, as they say, we've got some dudes, on both sides of the ball. We've got some dudes that are exceptional high school football players. So I don't think they ever lack for confidence. I think our kids now, we're to the point where 8-3 last year? We're 4-1 right now, so that's 12-4 in our last 16 games.
They know how to win.
And they expect to. They expect to win. I don't think we're going to play anybody that they're going to be afraid of or not expect to win. And I think, based on what I see from our kids, somebody's going to have to be pretty darn good to beat us and play a really good game.
One thing that I've been seeing, and I talk about this all the time, they had people that were cramping up last week and it was not exceptionally hot. How do you go in for hydration? I know that you work your players very hard during the week, but I tell everybody, hydration is not something you do Friday morning for Friday night. You're constantly trying to keep that hydration level high. Spend just a minute on it.
Well, I think it's got to be all week, right? It's kind of like you said, you've got to drink, you've got to hydrate, water and electrolytes and Gatorade all week. I think, I've had great success with pickle juice at pregame meals, the night before.
That's old school.
And it works. It works. We really struggled week one when we played Case with kids cramping all over the field. And since then, knock on wood, we've been pretty good with it. But, it's not a condition thing because when you see a guy cramp, it's not because they're out of shape. It's because they're dehydrated.
Right.
It's not – most of us don't walk around hydrated. Most of us don't drink enough water. Right. So to push your kids to carry around a water bottle or a jug of water – all week long at school. And of course, those first three games are before school even starts. So you don't even see your kids during the day. They're probably laying around playing video games, right? And they're not drinking water. They're drinking soda or, if we were in the South, they'd be drinking sweet tea and everything else. So they're not hydrating like they should be. And it's, like you said, it's an all week thing. And then I go to the pickle juice and things like that.
Sure.
For sure.
I'm going to give you the last word, Coach. You've got 60 seconds. Tell me about West Osha.
Well, I kind of touched on before, we've got some dudes. We've got some players on both sides of the ball that I would consider exceptional high school football players. Our quarterback's a three-year starter. He tied the state record, 3 weeks ago with 9 touchdown passes.
In one game.
Colin Meininger he has the best ball skills of that I've ever seen a receiver have in 23 years of coaching high school football. And I coached against Santonio Holmes, who played for the Steelers. Right. And Colin has better ball skills than he does. Not to mention our other receivers can play too. We've got two great inside linebackers that are big, physical, fast kids that are smart too. I'd like to think we're well coached on both sides of the ball that, like I said, it's going to take somebody good that's well coached to beat us. And I don't just mean in our conference, I mean in the playoffs and beyond. I expect us to do well, and I think our kids now expect to do well. And that's the big thing, is the expectation to win and having those dudes, you know, and having those kids that you can rely on that are going to be difference makers, that tilt the field in your favor.
This has been Education Matters with Troy Bow. I'm Bob Haggerty. Thanks so much for joining us. And I hope you listen and view the games on Friday night. Friday Night Lights, WGTD Sports on Facebook. Hey, Coach, maybe someday we'll get you on it, huh?
Looking forward to it.
There you go. Have a great day, everybody.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
All this week on WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're enjoying the music of Kenosha's John Crawford Jazz Band.
And a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
At the end of every WGTD midday newscast, we feature a song by a local artist. So why not join us for Noon Tunes?